With tough times, we're starting to see a lot of folks that are interested in homesteading land and gardens, or adding gardens and fruit trees, nut trees to their own land. And this week I talk with Carrie Brown from Strong Roots Resources, and we talk about tips for how to find your homestead property. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Check out the Permies Digital Marketplace. It's your source for all things permaculture for your homestead, side hustle, and designing your intentional life, from video courses to blueprints to books. There's a link in the show notes, Permies Digital Marketplace. Check it out. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I have Carrie Brown from Strong Roots Resources with me, and we're talking about tips for finding your homestead property. How you doing, Carrie?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Good. So yeah, we're starting to see some folks that with the tough times are looking for land. They're wanting to add gardens or trees or whatever else. What are you seeing? You seeing any trends with that?
Same. Yeah. I'm talking to folks just about every day in one form or another, forums, phone calls, emails. We're continuing to have a very steady attendance to the homesteading festivals and gatherings, large and small. So it's definitely out there in the public consciousness. And I was even noticing, I'm going to have a brain fart on the name of the podcast that I was listening to the other day, but it's a podcast that has nothing to do with homesteading. Mm-hmm. It's more of about like psychology and consciousness and things of that nature. And these two ladies were saying, hey, you need to start storing food, storing water, storing extra medication, learning more skills. And this was something that had never come up on this show before. So that was that was an interesting data point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I had one of the other podcasts I follow said he just did a consult with a lady that wanted to get her gardens going so that she could handle the family coming out in a shit it's a van situation.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, hope you've been gardening up to this point, because it's hard to start from scratch.
Yeah, it's a process. It really is.
Yep, definitely. So say somebody's looking from scratch, right? What are some of the overall tips you would give to someone if they were starting their search?
So when it comes to actually looking for properties, at least in my area, the real estate market, to my eye, still appears to be pretty inflated and pretty bonkers and highly competitive. There's still places that are going for above asking price and that sort of thing. So right. One suggestion is to maybe steer clear, or not look only at official listings with the MLS number and that kind of stuff. And talk to realtors, or even you can check in with like your financial institutions, because there are people who deal with off-market properties, and they're, mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure how to specify it, but that is a distinction between, basically they are dealing with people who are considering listing their properties. Like they have opened up a dialogue about that, but they haven't actually gone through the process because they're not ready to be inundated with, a million people wanting to come look at their property. Right. So if you're in your area, look around, ask around and find out who deals in off-market properties. And that's not the same as these kind of like venture capitalist types that are just trying to they're just cold calling and they're just asking, hey, we get this question all the time. Do you guys want to sell?
Sure.
Because they want to put a high density subdivision up here. Mm-hmm. So there is that distinction. That one is, I think, a little bit overlooked. Now, I know a lady here locally in East Tennessee. Her name is Marcy Yaden, and I'll provide you with her contact info for you to throw into the show notes. But that's a lot of what she does, is working directly with people who are considering selling, mm-hmm. and people who are on the hunt, and they try to make that match.
Right. Yeah, it's now to the point where Zillow's useless because stuff is selling before it posts on there. Or, somebody's dropping, like you were saying, they're dropping a cash
offer that's above asking price or something like that. So there's still folks out there, probably California people, that that have some sort of cash because they sold their previous place, which makes it difficult if you're trying to do a contingency and sell your place because you're not going to be able to compete with them. So yeah, getting your network involved, your friends, your neighbors, your whatever, they may have some family members that are getting ready to sell, and you may be able to make a deal without them having to, go through all the hoops.
And in a, along the lines of out of the box thinking, now this of course not for everybody, but if you're running into these kind of intentional community type places, and a lot of these are kind of going with a private membership model now, see what they're like, do your due diligence and all that. But that might be something that works for people. We've got a place not too far from us called Haven Earth. And they are a ministry, there's a certain nonprofit private membership certification that they have. They've got like one other aspect, but they've kind of got like this little tripod of details that keep everything above board, keep you out of issues with regulatory authorities and things like that. And that I've been down there a number of times, and what I notice is that a lot of people who are moving there, so they have multiple yurts, nice yurts, well-built yurts on the property. And these are people who maybe were actually considering like a quote unquote retirement village or something of that nature, but they didn't want to be in an HOA and they didn't want to be around people who maybe didn't share their same values. So they've opted for this instead, where they can still get outside and garden, still participate in community, and kind of feel like their neighbors actually have their back. So that's something else. And that's just a matter of digging around in your local area.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that. I think that John Bush has something like that down in Texas now, where he bought some land and they're doing that. And then Little Pine Farmer over in Colorado, he's looking for someone to come and hang out on his place. And I don't know all the details, but sharing the abundance. So.
There is also a Facebook group. I believe it's titled Homestead Roommates, and that is another kind of, maybe it's older homesteaders or people who are single or don't have a lot of kids with them, and they basically need help, and it's just a way to connect people, and then you can work out the specific details for your situation. So that's another one, and I'm pretty sure that one covers the US, so it's not just necessarily Tennessee specific. In terms of doing searches for people who use Telegram, there is a group called the TSP Land Group that's kind of an offshoot of the Survival Podcast, and people are putting listings in there. So it's kind of just people who are, maybe they see a listing in their area and they just copy it over to that group. So it's kind of a conglomeration of things. But I see a lot of stuff pop up in there, and that tends to be a little more of like raw land, undeveloped land. So take that into account, but that's another option.
Yeah, definitely. So if someone was looking in, say they've got their area figured out, maybe they're going to start with raw land or whatever, and they come to you, what kind of tips do you have for, making sure one of my main tips is, look around at your neighbors. Are they growing food? Are they growing lawns? Zoom out in Google Earth, whatever, right? We've got a lot of problems here where in Northeast Kansas, where we're next to the bluest county in the state, and they're moving out here. It's sort of a California situation. And then there we had one lady that was in the newspaper because she was getting towards retirement. I think she had worked for the school system or something like that, bought land, was gonna go enjoy the sunsets, and then was just incensed that the country was the country. So people were firing guns, people riding their ATVs up and down the street. She accidentally figured out afterwards that she's on a dirt road to the quarry, and there was a even a pumpkin patch down the street, and so she was just think of the noise, you know, like the Grinch, right? And she went to the county commission and started causing all kinds of problems, and managed to get one of those things shut down. But she calls the She was in the newspaper. That's how I saw it. But the she calls the sheriff all the time for the gunshots. And during hunting season, you can tell when shooting lights starts because you start hearing gunshots because people are practicing, and that just infuriated her. And it's like, hey, you moved out to the country, but she did not want to live in the country, I guess.
You have to be willing to understand how much control of things that you're willing to relinquish in terms of neighbors and all that.
Right.
That's just part of that part of reality. I actually just had I guess we did it last week. If people want to look at my channel, Alana Bliss and I had a really great conversation about integrating yourself into a rural, specifically southern community, since that's my wheelhouse, and her experience in doing that as somebody who has lived all over and is not native to the South, but also as somebody who is, an American who is also living in Costa Rica. So, yeah, think about how you want to, what kind of vibe you want to put out there.
Sure.
Most people are out in the sticks because they want to be left alone. If you're willing to roll with that and overlook things here and there, life can be pretty good. If you're a transplant and you refuse to do stuff like that, life may get pretty miserable for you, depending upon what kind of people are around. When somebody arrives on property, especially if it's been undeveloped in any form, you got to be thinking about how you're going to get your water. Too many people overlook this. It's just absolutely critical. If your only option is to gather rainwater, I wouldn't say it's a no-go, but you better know how much rain you're expected to get and when that rain comes. Like here in East Tennessee, we'll average about 55 inches a year, but sometimes we'll get a whole lot of that in March, February, March, and then we went practically half of June and most of July without hardly any at all until these last few days. So, have that in mind, and really think about your access to the property. Is there only one way in and out? Is there, are we fording creeks? Is it gonna Are you on a driveway that's gonna wash the, there need to be infrastructure improvements like culverts and drainage and grading and things like that. And think about how you're gonna be able to get your structures on there. Something that's kind of more hands-on might be suitable for somebody who's, 20s, 30s. I know after 40, I want to work a lot smarter and maybe not quite so hard. So that's something to take into account. And this, I feel like maybe this gets overlooked a little bit, is the aspect of the land. So I personally would not ever want north facing forested land. If that was all that was on the land, not just a portion of it, that if that was it was like 5 acres. No, you're just never going to get enough sunlight to do hardly anything except a little bit of forest gardening. And it's not that it couldn't work, but personally for me, like I need a lot of sunshine. So, if you're like super goth and you're into that, then maybe a north facing hillside, forested hillside would work for you. I know personally, I like to have a lot of sky and a lot of sun. So, and really look at how that wind moves across the property. Look at how the water moves across it. Does it go fast? Does it percolate? Does it pool in certain areas? Things of that nature. Does it take all of your gravel and soil with it? Because when we're real excited, when we're in the moment of we're going to find land, we're going to get land, and if you couple that with feeling pressured or like you're in a hurry or that you've just got to take the first thing you can get your hands on, you know, you could be getting yourself into some trouble. So try to make sure that you are looking at it as dispassionately as possible. And if you can't do that and be honest with yourself, get somebody else out there, even if it's just a buddy, a friend, somebody local, I don't care, but get somebody out there to look at it with you, who's not going to become emotionally attached to it.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I really like what you said about the aspect, because, you know, we've here in Northeast Kansas, we've had late frost and early blooming the last 3 out of 4 years. And so this year, the pears and the peaches were a loss. Last year, the apples and the chestnuts were a loss. And I had apples on one side of the tree. And everybody I know, like the chestnut farm down the way, had a really, really horrible harvest because it froze off the blossoms. So yeah, those are real important. People don't think about that. I know when I looked at my land, I've got 10 acres here in Northeast Kansas. I looked at it 10 years ago when we moved in. My wife disappeared. She went over looking. The most important thing for her was the barn and the fencing. And the back half of our back third of our property was woods. So she disappeared into the woods, and the realtor's going, I'm going to show you the house. And I said, I don't think she cares about the house. she cares about the barn and the fencing. So she eventually came back, but it was kind of funny.
The homesteader mindset is funny about that. You know, if we look at the house, we're like, okay, is the foundation okay? And the roof's not leaking. Yes. And yes. All right, let's rock and roll. And things like, you know, boundary fencing, perimeter fencing is a nice thing to have. Most of ours has come down over the years, and it's something that eventually I'd like to get back into place. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that stuff is even overlooked. Like when we're talking about looking at realtor listings, what's important to the homesteader and the preparedness minded person, they may not even get into that in the details of a listing, you know?
Sure.
I mean, how many listings tell you what species of plants and trees are already on the property or anything of that sort? I mean, I personally would get like excited about a junk pile on a on an old farm or something like that. So keep that stuff in mind.
Wow. Yeah, that's funny. So yeah, you go and check it out and do a foraging, you know, identify all the plants and stuff, right?
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll put it together in a document with GS tags, photo to help, you know, find it any time of year. And that's something I put together solo. And then once I have it complete, I return to the site and I go over it with the company, with the customer, separate of the rest of the design and consulting aspect, because it's that aspect alone can be pretty detail intensive. Mm-hmm. But I was on a property up in Berea, Kentucky on Monday, and I was up there as like kind of like a general site visit and consult, but just walking around. Is about 44 acres, all kinds of cool trees up there.
Wow.
Just, you know, kind of like mid succession forest, beautiful stuff. Found the pawpaws, found, you know, various, elm, lots of nut trees, lots of locusts, just a lot of, really useful trees. And another, you know, when those of us operating from the kind of the homesteading mindset, we are looking for what has multiple uses. So, you know, somebody may disparage a mulberry because it drops fruit on the sidewalk. And the rest of us are like, I'm so happy to have that tree. So yeah, I mean, get somebody, you know, find somebody local to your area who's knowledgeable on that stuff and have them walk around with you if you're going to a showing or to an open house for a property that's on the market or something like that. You can get a little bit ahead of the game that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So you also consult for some folks that are in the suburban area and they want a suburban homestead or whatever else. How does that differ from the more rural homestead? What kind of tips do you have for that?
Well, frankly, it can be a little bit easier and a little bit simpler. So while you do, you kind of sacrifice your ability to mostly to keep larger livestock. So let's say, you know, somebody's working with a quarter acre, maybe up to a half acre lot. Probably not going to be pulling off any ruminants, but you can do a lot of chickens, a lot of rabbits, quail, things of that nature. You could get really layered with your gardens. And the nice thing, you know, somebody who did the urban homesteading thing for many years, you can check on things so quick. Chores are so quick because you're not stretched out and you notice problems quicker. So if you're going to be, you know, if you prefer suburbia, you need to be in suburbia for commute times or whatever the case may be, or if that's just where you are and where you have to stay for a while, all these same principles apply. You know, keep stuff close to your house. You know, look for those marginal spaces and ask yourself, what can I use that space for? That's how that thinking right there got me so much more production off of a 1/5 acre lot, because I would look at a space and think, what else could that be used for that would be productive or useful or stack a function or something of that sort? And in a lot of ways, these are still my favorite properties to consult and design on, because it kind of forces a certain level of creative thinking.
Interesting. And then how do you work around if they inadvertently have an HOA already?
I will say that I'm no longer accepting people who are in an HOA. It's just more, even when I try to extract myself from having to wrangle with it, it still comes along some way. You know, it kind of depends on, you know, what you're willing to put up with. I personally think HOAs are one of the most ridiculous inventions ever. But if you're stuck with one, you know, you can go the route of adding things that are, you know, plants that are both ornamental and edible, and a lot of people won't know the difference. Get a really good understanding of the rules and the regulations so you can figure out what your other options are. And, you know, for people who want to, you can also, you have the option to just do what you want, and, you know, you can fight with them, you can take them to court, you can cite all kinds of stuff. I mean, it kind of depends on how much time you want to spend on it. But I kind of feel like that would be an absolute hard stop for me. If I'm in a place where an organization that's not even an elected government, although I guess some of those places do elect their own people, telling me what I can and cannot do with my land that has nothing to do with, you know, like, I can understand, let's not let a million bags of garbage pile up in the driveway or we're all going to have rats. Fine. Right. But having a peach tree in your front yard is not going to cause an issue. So, I guess you got to pick what you want, where you want your fight to be. I think it's just a personal decision. And you can get creative. You can find ways to hide things. Some people you can, you know, you're limited by what you can do in the front yard, but you can get away with whatever behind your privacy fence in the backyard. But if you're worried about what people think, you might be facing some even bigger issues in the coming years as things kind of tend to get a little squirrelier out there.
Right. Yeah, my friend lives on the edge of a HOA community in the suburbs. He's not part of the HOA, and he started putting in some solar panels in his backyard. And immediately it was like, hey, what are you doing, neighbor? You know? So it's like, yeah, that would go sideways. So
yeah, I feel for people who are in those situations, but also you knew what you were doing. You know, you knew it was there when you decided to buy. And, you know, I've run into people where they want, it's so bizarre, but I've run into people where they want like this Eden in their backyard, but they need the front yard to look incredibly uniform. And I, you know, it's like, I just could not get it across. Like, things will migrate. Like, their seed from a plant may disperse into your front yard. I mean, this just, especially when you're on, I mean, literally barely 1/5 of an acre. So, I think you got to reassess your priorities at that point.
Definitely true. What other tips do you have?
On the urban and suburban side of things, don't discount things like of your garage. You know, most places don't have any issue with ornamental ponds. They don't need to know that you've got, I don't know, tilapia in there that you harvest out before the winter comes, or that sort of thing. You know, think about what can be hidden in plain sight. A lot of people don't even really know what they're looking at half the time. So there's that. And I'm kind of a fan of doing things even now on a larger property. Do a like kind of like temporary structuring of things, like where things can be flexible and movable and can be altered until I really figure out what flow works, or, you know, if it does, what works for me and my wife, since she looks after things when I'm on the road. So, you know, be willing to, be flexible, and just, I think more than anything, just stay engaged with the process. Keep in mind why you're doing what you're doing. Don't get so tied up in, well, it's supposed to be this way. Nature doesn't care what you think. It's going to do what it's going to do. So understand, like, if something crazy has happened in your garden, try to understand why it is. Get your why under control, and then kind of go about how to mitigate. We're in the height of gardening season right now, so the vine borers are out, and all the bugs, all the Japanese beetles. And, you know, some people treat it like an absolute war. And I get it. Like, it sucks when your plants get wrecked. I get it. It's aggravating. It's discouraging. But I don't want to go outside of my garden feeling like I'm fixing to wage a war. I want to go out there to, you know, pull some weeds out, feed to the rabbits, grab some tomatoes, you know, throw a little compost on here and there. And just remember why I do this stuff, because I don't have to. I mean, I could just go buy food and it would technically be simpler than what I'm doing. But, you know, ask yourself why you're doing it, and just kind of stay locked into that. I think a lot of us get overwhelmed, and we kind of get too in our head about things. So, so just keep your mind on what your mission really is.
What new stuff do you have going on your land this year?
So I am doing rabbits for the first time. I never got to them when we were doing the urban thing. And I have managed to make pretty much every rabbit error in all fairness. I got, so they were given to me. I had some customers who needed to offload them due to illness, and they had 15 adult rabbits. And I did not know at the time if any of the females had been bred. So I did get a hutch. So I did have some infrastructure, and I had a couple of extra chicken tractors that I had altered with webbing on the bottom to keep them from digging out. So I have, you know, I have places to put them. I did have my infrastructure in place, but within about 3 days of having them, three of the females had kits. So I suddenly had, I mean, they had 8 or 9 apiece, and it was just complete chaos with, you know, male rabbits running around and kits getting trampled. And it was, you know, tragic and terrible. And so I, you know, got them out, got everybody sorted out, had an exceptionally high death rate of this first round of kits. A snake got in there at one point. I've had losses due to a snake, so I've had to adjust for that. And I just have found some dead. All the adults have survived, and I pared down my adults. So I ended up keeping 3 females and 2 males, and everybody else went to friends and community members. Mm-hmm. And because Lord knows, I don't know what I was going to do with 15 adult rabbits. So I got the, four kits left alive that are going to be processed. And this is mostly for dog food. This is mostly to feed Trip. I'm sure we'll probably eat some, but sure. Frankly, I can dispatch one and not have to process it and just give it to Trip, and she knows what to do because she's fast enough. She will occasionally catch a wild one around here. She's not the fastest dog, but when she does, she's real happy. So, I just, give her a rabbit every 3-4 days and call it good. Mm-hmm. So that's been, but what has been nice about that is I noticed when I had rabbits to feed, I've been way more up on weeding the gardens, because the more weeds I feed them, the less commercial feed they require. And mm-hmm. I would like to get them to a point where we're not having to buy commercial feed at all, and go exclusively off of the fodder tree system, the Comfrey, garden weeds and all that kind of stuff. But I wanted to kind of have a few litters first and see how the weight gain works and all that kind of stuff. And I've got all kinds of different varieties, so they're all going to be mutts. Mm-hmm. So I kind of got to figure out who puts on weight well, who doesn't, all that kind of stuff. Right. And I've loved having the manure. So I collect their manure from the ones that are in the hutch. I collect it in bins underneath, and every few days, those bins, sometimes it goes to the worm bin. Sometimes it goes just directly into a garden or around a fruit tree. I just kind of been spreading the fertility around. Mm-hmm. So, all of us homesteaders are always happy when we have more poop. So mm-hmm. the poop has been nice. Let's see what else. Kind of dialing in managing the sheep. So August will be a year of having these sheep, getting a little more diligent about how they're grazing, like how we're running the paddocks, how long they're in them, trying to get to more where we're moving more frequently. So we're doing smaller paddocks, more frequent moves. I'm trying to get a more consistent impact on the land and just kind of observe, how the land responds to that. And for the most part, we're pretty much, slow and steady wins the race around here. We've just, we are going to do a shed in September. We have, one of our shortages around here has always been storage space, dry storage space / workspace. Mm-hmm. So, we've got our workshop that also serves as my office, library, woodworking shop for Angel, the gym, and the fridge and the freezers. And of course the cabin, and that's 400 square feet, and the cabin's 400 square feet. So we're not talking about tons of space here. So we are going to put up a shed in September. We're going to harvest locusts off the land, do locust posts. Wow. We're mostly doing, reclaimed materials around here. And on the west facing side that's actually going to be the compost catch point. So that's where we're going to be making our compost. It'll be covered. And that will let me disassemble my pallet system right now, which works, but it's kind of unsightly, and you kind of wind up with a lot of bulky stuff. And at some point, your pallets start to rot, and you got to pull them out anyhow. So
right.
I'll DC that. We'll put the shed in its place. We're probably looking at about, I think we were talking about doing about 16x30, and then the other side, so kind of be like A-frame style. The other side that will be protected from the weather will be our firewood storage.
Oh, wow. Good.
I've just been keeping the firewood in a rack in the high tunnel, which has worked because we don't go through a ton of firewood in a home that small with a tiny wood stove. Mm-hmm. But this will actually let me store way more and be able to stage it where I'll have like a seasoning pile, halfway seasoned pile, ready to rock and roll pile.
Yep.
And it'll be protected from the way the weather moves across the land. So that'll be nice. We got some friends coming out. I've kind of built up a little bit of social capital in a couple of different groups. So we've got friends coming out to help us knock that out over hopefully a day and a half. So looking forward to
Wow,
doing
that's pretty
that.
good. So if someone's looking to get some feedback on their land, they're checking it out, how can they contact you?
Strongrootsresources@gmail.com. The website's strongrootsresources.com. All the info is on the homepage there. I'm based in Knoxville, Tennessee, but I will travel about a 4-hour radius around there to consult with folks, help them set up their processes, all that good stuff. I really like to help people understand what's going on with their land so they kind of have a better footing going forward as to why things work the way they do. That's really what I've made my mission to be. So yeah, always happy to help folks. Just give me a holler. That's kind of my thing these days.
Great. Thanks, Kerry.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com. If you like this content, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thrive in the Future, or go check out the stuff on our stuff page on thriveinthefuture.com/stuff. You'll help support the podcast and maybe a little less hysteria in your life. Take care, everybody.